Daniel Evin, Reel 5.
And the second time when I came to my mother, to hospital, again to mother, because she was in hospital, I was looking to go in hospital where is she, you know, it was several hospitals around and so on. And it was for this, what you mentioned, for this illness of
shingles, yes.
Yeah, the skin illness, you know, but terrible one. And I had all body bandages and so on. And I cured, yes, of course, after, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 days, something like this again. And then I went and come back. Somehow it was middle of 44, the partisan movement was strong, became to be more regular and so on, and they didn't lack all the couriers of units of fighters and so on. And then to save me somehow, they sent me to be a telephonist in the main central hospital, Croatia Partisan Central Hospital in Petrova Gora. Gora, that is a mountain. Peter's Mountain, that's the name, Petrova Gora. It's in the middle of well known. Hospital and place to be a telephonist, and my mother came later on to the same place, hospital to be a kind of manager, I don't know what administrative something like this. So I've been then from the middle of, I've been nearly half a year together with my mother, and then we split again. Then we split again. I went again to the district committee, and a month before end of the war, we joined again down in the Zadar split area, called Dalmatia, which was already liberated, finally liberated, let's say, not just for a few days, but finally liberated. And I saw for the first time English units there. And then we came together to our town in the beginning of May when it was liberated. And second day came my brother from other side he was all the time in after he escaped from the prison in 43, after that he remained in the fighter units. And he ended up as a 70 years of age, the youngest officer in the army, captain. He was a commissar. Here is a picture. Mm-hmm.
How many women were there in the partisan units?
What? Yes, quite a number. Even in units, fighters, not of course in the hospitals, nurses, in institution, in staff, you know, in command, in offices, a lot. But in units as well.
And how were they treated, women? You were saying they were fighters. Would they have been equal to men?
Yes.
Regarded?
In the beginning it was this ethic, you know, Marx, communist ethic, we are all the same, we are equal, and so on. Later on, became to be compromised, but it was, and it was not possible that a man and a woman, husband and woman is together, never, only Tito, but it was not official, you know, actually it was not his wife was in the prison, in Mustafa camp, they exchanged for her some prisoners, of German prisoners, that is a special story as well. But when he went to Belgrade, you know, alone, first time, he was asking for a courier. And this Dalibor card, they sent a young student of medicine, and she became to his mistress. Actually, I think that was the greatest influence, the greatest connection, the strongest connection his feelings among women was this, actually. He became his secretary during the war. And it was really that even some member of Politburo was not aware that she is actually his mistress. Just few people, you know. She was there, and her name was Zorka, nickname, because proper name was Zorka. Anyway, it was a rule that boy and girl, wife and husband, and can't be together in the same unit, same office. That was the rule.
Was that part of this high morality? What was the sort of lifestyle you lived, though, when you were in the woods, for instance? You've explained your first camp with the tents you lived in. Was it a very rough and, Spartan lifestyle?
I haven't the experience of a heart. Maybe because I was a child, you know, and I was not doing the tent. I was not. I was happy, of course. But for me, it was something interesting, but maybe something special, enjoying, because I was child. Maybe I was not, but it was fun, of course. For instance, in autumn of 1942, after one of the offensives. We was in the wood, not far away from Drevnica, if you ask me. And we was without water. It was hospital, then about a kilometer divided, hospital in the woods, and this command of 5th Zone, and some other units, without water, and without salt. And it was a wood, and in wood you have rotten trees falling down, long time. And they, when it's rain, they are full of water. And if you take this wood, it's a rotten, you can squeeze it. And then it's coming to drops of the water, very, very bitter from wood, very bitter. Brownish and bitter, but that was for about 10-15 days or, and it was terrible rationalization, you know, first abundance. Now I was a child, but as a child it was the old year. Now, oh yes. If you ask me what is in my memory the most somehow sore moment, it was, I tell you what, it was, that was exactly before splitting mother my brother on three sides. It was 3 months after we came to the party, 2 months after marriage. It was from Italian offensive, we went from Dresnica to the woods. And I tell you the story. Some village people there, explained that it's, I don't know how far, 7-8 kilometers, maybe 10 kilometers far, a cave in which is always snow. And so they composed their units to go with the sacks, with some, what is in English, sack, yeah, in which you put potato or something, you know this, yes, or carry back, let's say, but be careful, okay, and to take the snow somehow, to bring it. And it was a terrible complication because you put it in the this side, but it was aware that during, you know, it was a 2 hours walking, it's going to melt it, but they took, in the same time, they had to take something for melting and so on. Anyway, my brother was in this unit. I was too small to go with them because he's a character, but he was a little bit older, but in the same time, he was not so grown up. So he was the one who was put on the rope, yes, down to the cave to fill up all the snow. And he was working 2 hours. And then up, and then going back, high morality, not drinking, not taking snow, a little bit maybe, yes, but not a lot, to bring for the wounded. And when he came back, and it was given to everybody, you know, he is left without anything. And I look at now, and I was somehow, as a child, I want to be an example, and I was not enough drinking, something like this. Anyway, we was without food. Food was just cooking grass, little grass, what you find, you know, around in the woods, around trees, you have this green. We was cooking this without salt and so on. It was hunger, it was without water. And it's actually a story of understanding what is a mother. She was sitting, and I remember my brother looking, you know, with the eyes, so sorrow, I never. And suddenly, my mother from somewhere took a
sugar lump.
And put on each drops of alcohol, because she was always having alcohol, she was in medicine unit, you know, alcohol for cleaning. She put the alcohol. I remember from all my life how small amount of food and liquid can be enough for hunger and for thirst. You know, to each she gave
yes.
One cube of sugar to my life, and one cube to me. It was fantastic. It was, you know, celebration. Not just a hotel.
Were you often hungry like that and thirsty?
Yes. But often it was opposite. In Autochats, I was eating a cake. Every second day, maybe. After the meal. Normal meal. Autochats, first time, first 2 months in Dresden, before this visit, when we escaped to the woods. Later, 44 was already regular shipment of food by English and American forces with aeroplanes. The aeroplanes even came down, you know, on the night shift airport.
So you were aware of Allied help, were you, as a young child?
Very much. Because it was talking how to accept this, you know, it's an imperialistic state. I was listening the discussion among very primitive partisan fighters who was educated. You know, they don't know nothing. They know that it's a fascist, and they are criminals, and you have on the West, you have imperialists, and so on, you know. And suddenly you have to be friends. You are not only friends, you are fighting together with this imperialist bloody, you know, exploitators from London or New York or something like this. But it very quick. It was very quick development, you know, very very quick, without any instructions and everything, you know. Whenever you are look, if would be something normal life, then this development to accept English and American soldiers, actually help of them is first coming. So as something for the friends, if it's normal life, it would be maybe long time difficult. But it was fighting, you know. And whoever is helping you in the most dangerous time, you forget immediately the theory and the direction and command and everything. It's recognizable. He's the one who is helping me, so it was very quick development that the partisan, ordinary partisan fighters accept this help as a friendship, help from the friends, from the side of the friends and allies. And so.
Did you ever see any of the English people yourself before you saw the English units at the end of the war?
They came with a parachute. Quite a number of, after Deakin and after McLean, I saw Churchill. Churchill was the Randolph, the son. He was in the hospital where I'd been telephonist later on. And this Evelyn Waugh was with him. Quite, I remember it once very young. Churchill was, they have an accident with an aeroplane. It's not, it's a written. I think even Martin Gilbert was writing about it. They had, when they landing, something happened with the aeroplane, so on. So Churchill was wounded a little bit. And he came there, and I think to my mother, or somebody of this high commander of partisan units told to my mother, be careful a little bit with him, he's son of Churchill, of course. And so he, after the war, he got a letter from Randolph Weiss, so he was in some connection. She sent him congratulations for Christmas. And writer Waugh, you know Waugh, Evelyn Waugh, writer. He was with him. They was they came beginning of 44 with parachute. You know. So I saw English. First time I saw them by the end. No, it was they came in Croatia. One group of member, I think, of this SOE, you know, Special Operation Executive, who was parachuted in various places in Balkan. First of them being Deakin, they came to Tito Hart's headquarters. But the second one, the first one, came in Croatia near Otočac, and I saw them. It was, I don't know, 43, middle of 43, I would say so. Mm-hmm. Towards the autumn.
And were you getting also Russian help? Were the Russians helping the Yugoslavs?
Stories, you know. A lot of stories then. Yes, oh, the Russians sent us this. And then a few days later, no, it was some story. Then again, you know, the people was, of course, most friendship feeling was towards Russia, so, and they invaded, not to the command, but in the ordinary soldiers, to save imagination in the context of Russian, they started to, oh yes, I heard from somebody, it's a huge escadrille of aeroplane landed with a, after a few days, no, it's not, they want to come, but they couldn't because it was a bad weather, it was this and it was this, and always is going this. And so, and always disappointment that in the background of speaking with, you know. that is the background, beginning, why Tito was brave, actually clever, to realize that he will have support if he come in the confrontation with Stalin. You know, he know everybody who was there. He it was aware on the end of the war. It was not official saying, but everybody was aware Russian didn't have us. Just with the words. You know? That was the background. Already, one of the backgrounds, one of the reasons.
You were saying earlier, Danko, about the liberation of Yugoslavia. How much help did the Russians give with that?
Oh, yes. In the last part of the war, in 44, they entered the territory of Yugoslavia from Romania, and they, without them, I think only partisan unions would not so so easily. It was not easy. It was a fight of 8 days to liberate Belgrade, for instance. It would be maybe 2 months later if Russia didn't came. Normal army, Red Army came, and it was joined with partisans, liberated Belgrade and all this Serbia, part of Serbia around Belgrade, north of Belgrade, and so on. Yes.
Wait, did you see the Russians at all?
Were yes, in Zagreb I saw them. I saw them in Zagreb. They've been very accepted, very. They've been very. And they feel themselves free. Later on, I heard stories about from Russian people that they, during the war they enjoyed only one freedom in the whole history since, I don't know, revolution. You know, in the war times, Stalin was enough clever to give them a little bit freedom, so they enjoy it.
Was there any worry about Russian behavior in Yugoslavia?
It was rumors. I know about this, of course. But in Zagreb, it was never a unit. Never proper units came to Zagreb, to Croatia. It was just some delegations, some officers, you understand. And before that, even, I saw Russian doctors. Yes. It came, first of them came, chirurg, medicine, you know, military doctors. Came, I think, in the beginning of 44, they came with a parachute. So I saw a person, but not a unit. But there, in Serbia, around Belgrade, they behaved, of course, very, very nice and very badly. A lot of them. And the story is clear, yes. I heard the story about the behavior of Russian people there in Serbia and so on. I was then not accepted so easily. I said, oh, who is this observation? It's not, it can maybe one or two that you killed or something, the rape and this, you know, this whole story. But later on, I was aware. It happened not only here and there, but in a lot of occasions. And people there experienced this in Serbia, around Belgrade, in the area in which Red Army entered. But at the same time, I'm stopping people. It was, you know, all sorts of people. Among Russians was extremely nice people as well. At the same time, as very bad people. So actually, they told me the people in Vojvodina, where they came, actually, majority of these Red Army units came to this Vojvodina region, and they stayed 2-3 months there, so on. I spoke with my friends who been there, child as well, you know, it was a time, 10 years, 15 years, they remember exactly. My conclusion is, they drank a lot, you know, and most of the crime happened when they died. They didn't do imprisoned interrogation. occupation and so on, this kind. It was a military. Obviously, it was command, don't interfere with local punishments and so on and so on. But they did a lot of stealing, raping, killing in nights and so on, fighting, you know. And it seems to me in the, you know, in the mood of somebody who is very, very drunk and so on. But it was not, nobody was standing and I never heard that it was some policy of punishment or something like this. They left this to the party members. The party members did a lot of execution without court, and, you know, just for the wars and so on. It was, yes, revenge execution. No.
Towards the Russians?
No. Towards the Soviets.
Yes, did that happen a lot towards the end of the war?
Yes.
With people who had collaborated?
Yes. It started in 1944, started executions from partisan side. You know, they entered towns and villages. Oh, you know, this one was collaborated and this one. And it was not true collaborated. It was maybe some revenge. And somebody is coming and saying, oh, this one it was collaborated. This one was collaborated. Okay, execution. No, it was not court.
So it would seem from what you're saying the high morality had deteriorated towards the end of the war.
Yes. You can say shortly, I witness that in the beginning you can really say that was every village, every town was liberated in a full sense of the word. But towards the end of the war was more and more revenge and less liberation. Do you understand? When they entered in the some town, it was liberated, of course, but in the same time it was the revenge or punishment or something like this.
And it wasn't always just, you felt?
No, it was not. It was, yes. Mostly, court, you can't say nothing is justified. But yes, I would say that the majority of them was guilty. Maybe not for execution, but was guilty, of course. They find them in uniform or something like this. But great number, I don't know how much, you never know how much.
Could I ask you now about Mihailovich? I mean, as a young boy, I have to remember all the time, your very young age, you were the sort of young, you were the youngest one.
The first days in Karlovac already, it was the Chetniks are the bravest units in the world, they will defend Yugoslavia. This was, you know, who will defeat the Germans? Chetniks, Yugoslavian Chetniks. Very soon, I've been in Krajovica before spring of 1942 in Krajovica. I as a child heard about Chetniks. The same time, I was connected as a child with Patriot, but I heard about Chetniks, that in Serbia here Chetniks are fighting as well again Germans, about Draža Mihailović. But when I came to Partizan in Drežnica, it was just months or 2 months after some Chetnik units, which was in the beginning together with Partizan, went to the Italians. So I was from the beginning, 1942, when I came to Drežnica, I was aware that the Chetniks are enemy. Enemy and fighting on the side of occupation. Definitely. Because they've been in occupied territory, living there, coming from there, fighting partisans.
Were you hearing about the, one knows of these awful massacres that occurred in Yugoslavia? You know, there was a lot of Serbs were exterminated, weren't they?
In the concentration camps.
Yes, did you hear of that?
Yes, of course. I saw the partner liberated a village or small town and immediately was exterminated mass graveyards. It was very long, immediately. During the war, immediately, of course.
How about the situation for Jewish people? Did you know in the war what was happening?
It's a special case. First of all, I told you it's a small percentage. 72,000 in 12 Yugoslavia, which was, I think, 12, 30 million. Secondly, the Jewish